This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, this is Jim Nunn with your Inquirer Sports on Saturday, the 11th day of May. Hopefully everyone's doing well out there, and we'll take a look and see what's going on inside the sports section. As is our habit, first we will start off with on the air, TV, radio. How about a little bit of auto racing? NASCAR Xfinity Series from Darlington, 1:30 today on Fox Sports 1. IndyCar Series pre-race, 3 o'clock on NBC. IndyCar Series the Grand Prix, 3:30, NBC. Monster Energy Supercross, 8 o'clock tonight on USA. Well, there was only one listing under fishing, and I'm afraid we missed it. It was 7:30 this morning, Bassmaster on Fox Sports 1, so probably shouldn't even mention that, but how about, here we go with golf, PGA Tour, the Wells Fargo Championship, third round, 1 o'clock today on the Golf Channel. Of course, that event, the PGA Tour event, Wells Fargo, moves to CBS at 3 o'clock. Then we also have PGA Tour 2024 Myrtle Beach Classic, 3 o'clock on the Golf Channel. And we wind things up, Regions Traditions, 2024 Regions Traditions, whatever that is, but it's at 5 o'clock on the Golf Channel. A little bit of baseball. We have Atlanta at New York Mets, 4 o'clock today on Fox Sports 1. And I'll read about it, hopefully, a little bit. But the Reds actually won last night, which is great news. But the Reds are at San Francisco again today, 7 o'clock tonight, Fox, and also 700 AM radio. Kansas City at the Los Angeles Angels, 9:30 tonight, MLB Network. NBA basketball, Western Conference playoffs, Oklahoma City at Dallas, 3:30 today on ABC. Stay on ABC because the Eastern Conference playoffs tied one each, Boston at Cleveland. That'll be interesting. Boston really won big time the first game, and then I think Cleveland won big time the second. But anyway, like I think I said, 8:30 on ABC. NHL hockey. We have Eastern Conference playoffs, New York Rangers at Carolina, 7 tonight, TNT. Western Conference, Dallas at Colorado, 10 o'clock on TNT. Men's soccer. We go with the English Premier League teams to be announced, 12:30 noon, NBC. And then we have MLS FC Cincinnati at Columbus Crew. That ought to be a good one. That's at 7:45 tonight on Fox Sports 1, Apple TV, and 1530 AM radio. Let's see, women's soccer, NWSL Bay FC at Orlando Pride, 7:30 tonight on ION. I'm not sure what that is. Hopefully you know. Then we move to, let's see, no tennis. They're having the Italian Open, and that took place very early today. How about UFL football? St. Louis at Birmingham, 4 o'clock today on Fox. And that is it for TV radio. Not as lengthy as it is sometimes, I guess, during whatever, college football, college basketball, that kind of thing. But anyway, we also have upcoming events. FC Cincinnati, as mentioned, today they are at Columbus, 7:45 p.m. May 15th, they play Atlanta, 7:30 p.m. And then on the 18th of May, St. Louis at 7:30 p.m. Cincinnati Redlegs today at San Francisco, 7:15 p.m. The Reds sure need a few more victories. How about today? Like I said, 7:15 p.m. they play the Giants. Tomorrow they end the three-game series in San Francisco at 4:05 p.m. The next listing has May 13th at Arizona, 9:40 p.m. That is it for your TV, radio, and upcoming events. And now we will slide over to the front page. First off, we'll go with a little bit of Reds action. There's an article about the Reds losing streak hits 8, but they actually broke it last night. Here you go with the lowdown. Reds 4, Giants 2, Andrew Abbott, and 4 relievers combined on a 7-hitter. Stuart Fairchild homered, and Cincinnati held on to beat host San Francisco to snap an 8-game losing streak. Eli De La Cruz followed 2 hits with stolen bases that led to runs as the Reds spoiled the opener of San Francisco's 9-game homestand, getting a solo home run from Thyroa Estrada and an RBI single from Tyler Fitzgerald To overcome De La Cruz's first single steal run combination, the Giants led 2-1 before the Reds' star shortstop did it again on in the third. This time, his speed pressured Fitzgerald, the Giants' substitute center fielder, after an injury to Austin Slater into an error on a single, putting De La Cruz on second. He then quickly stole third and came home on Spencer Steer's single. Boy, he certainly is a player, isn't he? Moving across to other things on the front page, we have, I'm just reading it, hell is real, not heavenly. This is about FC Cincinnati. It's a question the Inquirer considered since, does FC Cincinnati have a Columbus Crew problem? It's a question the Inquirer considered since Columbus defeated FC Cincinnati in the December 2nd Eastern Conference Final. And it was the opening prompt put to FCC head coach Pat Noonan during his Thursday news conference at the Mercy Health Training Center. An intentionally open-ended question, it was going to be interesting to see how Noonan interpreted the question. This was his response. I guess it depends on who you ask. I think they're a very good team that's a challenge for us, the same as everybody else. So, you know, again, what's the problem? You know, they got the better of us last year in two of the three games, and then I guess in 2022, you know, different coach, different group. That year, I don't think we got a victory. So I think it's safe to say, and I'll only speak to our staff's period of working together, but they've gotten the better of us. So in terms of results, that's fair. It goes on to say, beyond that, there usually wouldn't be too much more to take from a regular season match played in May, but the game might hold some added meaning for FC Cincinnati, which is seen in its region of the state as lagging behind its in-state rival. Even though FC Cincinnati defeated Columbus in the regular season last year at TQL Stadium, the perception in some corners of the FCC fan base is that the Crew are getting the best of the rivalry. For some, the gap between the clubs in terms of meaningful victories is wide open, is a wide one, and that's a hard point to argue. I guess that's supposed to say that's a hard point to argue after the club's first ever playoff meeting last year. The prospect of revisiting lower.com field is an especially grim one for FC Cincinnati supporters. FCC not only has lost all three of its trips there, but it has not scored in 194 plus minutes of game action at the stadium. Jop Stam was still FC Cincinnati's head coach the last time FCC scored at lower.com field. Isaac Atanga and Ronald Matereta, two players that long ago departed FC Cincinnati, are the only players in the club has seen score at the stadium. FC Cincinnati is undoubtedly in a kind of golden era in its MLS existence. That fact is underscored by its Supporters Shield winning campaign last year, playoff berths in consecutive years, and a wide array of individual accolades achieved. Columbus still overshadows FCC in some of the most important ways, though. A week after hoisting the Eastern Conference Championship trophy at TQL Stadium, Columbus defeated Los Angeles FC to capture its third MLS Cup championship. Columbus was celebrated as a stylish champion for its attractive on-field style, too. That same style carried over to 2024 and helped the Crew this spring defeat back-to-back heavyweight Mexican clubs to reach the CONCACAF Championship Cup final. A victory June 1st against CF Pachuca's in the Crew's latest tournament final would see Columbus qualify for a coveted spot in the 2025 FIFA Club World Cup. Just this week, a refresh of the CONCACAF club rankings, which is affirmed by a merit-based point system, saw Columbus jump four spots to become the number one ranked club in all of North and Central America and the Caribbean. The plaudits, trophies, and high-profile matches keep rolling in for Columbus, which is occupying a place in the domestic and international soccer universes that FC Cincinnati will aspire to, still aspires to. Let's see, it goes on to say the arrival of FC Cincinnati's date with Columbus on Saturday produced some gloomy conversations about the Hell is Real Derby on social media channels, even though Cincinnati happens to be rolling at the moment. Cincinnati travels to Columbus on a three-match winning streak. It almost couldn't stop winning the flawed 1-0 match at Orlando City FC. FC Cincinnati scored 17 seconds into the contest and played up a man for almost an hour due to an Orlando red card. Eventually, FC Cincinnati ceded its man advantage due to a red card to Brett Halsey and had to eke out the victory, with Orlando threatening to equalize several times while shorthanded. We know that this was not our best performance, and this was something that we could learn from, because, like I said, it's good to learn from winning and to learn from when we lose. FC Cincinnati defensive midfielder Abena Nobata said of the win at Orlando, "That game was supposed to be one of our best performances for us to be able to have a goal at that time of game and then having also one man up, but we were not able to do that and we almost got punished for it." Luciano Acosta, the reigning most valuable player of MLS, keyed the attack during the winning streak with a goal in each match. Acosta is already up to 5 goals and 5 assists in regular season play. Interestingly, FC Cincinnati's offense seems to have opened up in the absence of designated player forward Aaron Bupanza. After averaging a goal per game through 8 regular season matches, FCC has 5 goals over its last 3 games. A period where Bupanza was either scratched from the starting lineup twice or out due to injury. Bupanza was benched for the April 20th and April 27th wins against Atlanta United and Colorado Rapids, respectively, and played just 15 minutes combined over those games. Bupanza was out due to a broken jaw, ouch, and related surgery for Saturday's win at Orlando, and is scheduled to miss up to 7 further weeks as he recovers. I'll bet a broken jaw. Defensively, goalkeeper Roman Celentano is among the statistical leaders at his position, even though he missed a month with an ankle injury. The shutout at Orlando was Celentano's league-leading 4th of 2024. FCC's team defending is tied with Real Salt Lake and Columbus for the fewest goals allowed. And then it just says here, it adds, Columbus's position in 12th place in the league-wide standings might look pedestrian, but that's a deceiving look. The Crew, 3-1-6, wow, have lost just once in their opening 10 league matches, and that's coming during a head-turning run in Champions Cup. With the June 1st Champions Cup final weeks away, and not having played since closing out CF Monterrey May 1st in the Champions Cup semifinal round, FC Cincinnati is preparing for the Crew's strongest possible lineup today. Well, that's that article, but, you know, it's like, I don't know, when they say, you know, we're cursed or something, my gosh, if you follow the Browns and the Bengals, they've gone on for so long, and there have been times it's been the Browns dominating, times it's been the Bengals. This is just something they got to write a story about, right? But that's just my take on it. How about the other front page story? Summit grad ending college career as top player. This is lacrosse. Summit Country Day graduate Sydney Black will become a professional lacrosse player after her college season ends. Black was drafted Wednesday night into the Athletes Unlimited Pro Lacrosse League. The league has 4 teams that compete during the summer in Baltimore. Black, a senior at Loyola University, Maryland, is one of the top players in NCAA Division I lacrosse as she leads her team into the NCAA tournament beginning this weekend. Black enters the tournament with 73 goals, 28 assists. She is one of 2 players in Division I to have more than 100 points this season, and she ranks in the top 50 in draw controls with 81. She has 175 goals and 68 assists in her college career. Wow. Loyola, who's 17-2, will open the postseason Friday. I don't know if that's next Friday or yesterday, but anyway, against Duke, who's 10-8 in Philadelphia, for the right to advance to a second round matchup Monday with either number 8 seed Penn, 13-4, or Richmond, who's 13-5. Loyola lost in the Elite 8 the previous 2 seasons. Black, the Patriot League Attacker of the Year, has surpassed personal bests in goals, assists, points, draw controls, and ground balls. She is a finalist for the Tewaraton Award, the Heisman Trophy of women's lacrosse honoring top players in the nation. She was one of 16 players drafted Wednesday. The new draftees and the current players in the league from last year are predominantly from the East Coast. In a recent interview in the Baltimore Sun, Black partially attributed her success this year to being fully healthy. She had 217 goals, 96 assists in her high school career, including 93 and 38 in her junior season. Her senior season was canceled by the pandemic. She was a U.S. lacrosse All-America and first-team All-State selection in 2019, leading the team to a district championship and regional runner-up spot. She also posted 329 draw controls in her career and 138 ground balls. Well, there you have it. I'm not sure I understand everything about lacrosse, but good for her. Now we move off the front page. Let's see what else we've got. How about a little bit of sports brief taken from one of the back pages? Bears rookie Caleb Williams to start at quarterback. Chicago Bears rookie Caleb Williams on Friday was named the team's starting quarterback for the upcoming season. The announcement comes as little surprise, given the Bears selected Williams with the top overall pick of the 2024 NFL draft out of Southern California. It goes on to say Tyson Bagdent, 23, is expected to serve as the backup. He started four games as an undrafted rookie last season. Bears coach Matt Eberflus did not mince words when announcing the decision on Williams. No conversation. He's the starter, the coach said. Williams, who's 22, said he's ready to take the steps to learn how to lead. Quote, to be a great leader, you have to learn how to follow first. So right now, I'm following all the vets. I'm following all the coaches. I'm listening, having both ears open and my mouth shut, just kind of sitting back listening, he said. When I get to the point of when I learn everything, when I learn the ways of how we do it, the culture, the playbook, and what the offensive line, wide receivers are all doing, running backs and tight ends, things like that, then you can start taking the lead. Then you can start taking the helms of it and take the next steps. For right now, though, I'm listening more than I'm speaking and talking, and I'm taking it one step at a time and being in the moment. Pacers coach, Pacers coach Carlisle, here's a different article then. Pacers coach Carlisle fined $35,000 for ripping officials. The NBA fined Indiana Pacers head coach Rick Carlisle, 35,000 smackers, on Friday for a public criticism of the officiating and questioning the integrity of the league and its officials. Carlisle said the Knicks were receiving preferential treatment as a big market team following Indiana's 130-121 loss to host New York in Game 2 of their Eastern Conference semifinal series. New York holds a 2-0 lead in the best of seven series heading into Game 3 on Friday night in Indianapolis. Small market teams deserve an equal shot, Carlisle said. They deserve a fair shot no matter where they're playing. ESPN reported Thursday that the Pacers are asking the NBA office to review 78 plays that they contend were called improperly, by officials in the first two games of the series. After Game 1, Carlisle said officials had made 29 wrong calls or incorrect non-calls in the game when 121-117 by New York. After what the Pacers believed were 49 similar instances in Game 2, the team decided to submit the plays to the NBA per ESPN. The Knicks will receive the videos for review too. I can promise you that we're going to submit these tonight, Carlisle said after Game 2. New York can get ready. They'll see them too. I'm always talking to our guys about not making it about the officials, but we deserve a fair shot. There's not a consistent balance, and that is disappointing. Well, that's a good point. And now here's an article about Joe Burrow returned to the practice field this week, throwing with teammates for the first time since his wrist and the Bengals season went pop in Baltimore last November. He threw short, he threw deep, he threw on the run, he threw off platform. During a one-hour session, the face of the franchise made every play expected of somebody 6 months removed from a wrist injury that's essentially unprecedented among major NFL quarterbacks. Wow. He's been throwing since early April and is fully cleared for everything except contact, which is expected to come in about a month. This was a difficult injury, Burrow said. This has definitely been one of the most challenging parts of my life for the past several months. But we're getting through it and continuing to improve mentally and physically every day. It's definitely a challenge and a process. Welcome to another year of dissecting a tricky rehab process for Burrow. From the lockout as a rookie in 2020 to the ACL in 2021 to the appendectomy in 2022 to the calf in 2023, The path from this point in the year to opening day has never felt like a summer breeze. He's walking, talking, touchdown throwing example of NFL unpredictability. There will always be an element of luck, but in trying to trim as much luck out of the equation as possible, Burrow's is building belief this year might be different. More than the presence of a compression sleeve on his arm, deep overthrow of Charlie Jones, or passing flick of the wrist rolling left, the most hopeful piece of information to come from Tuesday was insight into his latest evolution. Tiring and frustrating rehab following a lost season sent him to an accountable self-reflection. I'm going to be honest with myself about how my body is feeling, maybe a little more cautious than I have been in years past, Burrow said. So that's been kind of something that's been on my mind for the last couple of months. I'm getting better at that. It's always a challenge to not push yourself in that way, but I'm growing and learning every year, trying to be a pro and trying to figure out how to best be available for my team. He needs to be better about keeping himself on the field. Unable to finish two of his four seasons, he's coming to terms with the fact that it goes well beyond sliding before taking a hit or throwing the ball away under pressure. He needs to be honest with himself, his competitiveness, and the training staff around him. For a guy who's made a career on being addicted to getting better, as he said Tuesday, finding perspective to not push tirelessly in hopes of being Superman or immune to setbacks can be an extremely tough process. It goes against the basic instincts that define a player noted for being wired differently. Last year, it was the second day of training camp when Burrow felt enough discomfort to wear a compression sleeve on his calf, but still pushed over 2 hours into an intense July practice and pulled up lame. He suffered setbacks trying to come back too soon. Those drew his process out months too long into risky, unproductive situations. The experience left an imprint. I'm growing and learning how to handle my body, he said. I think that's a continued process of learning when to push through something that you think maybe might be there, and another day you might not be feeling great and this muscle's a little tight and like, hey, we got to take it easy today. So that's something that I'm continuing to learn. I think that's part of growing as a player and as a pro, and it's a continued process day in and day out. Trust in staying patient with his body and communication with the doctors could be the key to avoiding another situation like last year. This situation is not like returning from an ACL or even the calf. There is no template to follow. It was easy to pinpoint what made the last 6 months so trying. The uncertainty, Burrow said, I definitely was kind of flying blind throughout the beginning of the rehab process because I had not found any quarterbacks that had had this before. He spent time talking to offensive linemen, defensive linemen, and linebackers about the injury, looking for insight. They hardly require the same knowledge of the intricacies of motion as a player whose ability to snap his wrist is at the core of everything the franchise is trying to accomplish. Honesty, patience, and trust in a plan have been key in working with the director of rehab, Nick Cosgray, and head trainer, Matt Summers. Nick and Matt have really done a good job of making sure I get that motion back, and our rehab has been lights out, Burrow said. It's not perfect, Burrow says. He's not happy with his accuracy yet. That's among many ways it works in progress. As his knocking rust off his mechanics, some passes floated off target or skipped to the ground Tuesday. Not many, but it happens. There's definitely flashes of it getting better, he said. I'm excited about that. Risk still exists in the process, but most of it is behind him. His mere presence at OTAs was enough of a statement of how well things are going. At this point, it's just about getting ready to play football, he said. It will continue to get better. The knee was cleared after 9 months, but I didn't really start to feel normal until about a year out. I imagine this is about how that is going to feel. Fortunately, that coincides with the beginning of training camp and start of the season. Meanwhile, he spent the offseason attempting to build a stronger frame more capable of withstanding a full season of punishment. He's dialed up his calories and been able to keep up with a more focused workout program. I'm really strong, he said, bigger than I was. Will that be enough to get Burrow to January and beyond? I don't know, he said. That's what we're going to find out. That's kind of a work in progress of somebody's career. You're always growing and learning, and I'm trying to something new this year. So we'll see how I feel when the season rolls around and when camp rolls around, when we're on the field every day. But I don't know the answer to that. We're going to find out. Additional muscle, perspective, and patience may not matter. Perhaps there's another ailment around the corner. That's the life of a quarterback in an NFL where 67 different signal callers started a game last year. Burrow can live with that. He's done it before. But failing to evolve and improve a process that has not played out as well as he hoped through four seasons was not an option. Specifically, one that played out as it did in 2023, implementing a conscious understanding of himself, how to trim the margins of injury and limit the amount of bad luck that can creep into the equation is a major development. If all goes well, it could end up among the most important of his career. And that's that article, and that is certainly true, isn't it, about the unpredictability of sports and the human body, athletes getting hurt and playing well and all that good stuff. So moving on, how about a little bit of tennis roundup? Nadal rallies to win opening match in Rome. We're kind of winding down here, so I'll get in a little bit of this. Rafael Nadal trailed by a set against qualifier Zizou-Bergs, but rallied to win 4-6, 6-3, 6-4 in his opening round match in the Internazionale BNL d'Italia on Thursday in Rome. Nadal, dominant on clay courts in his career, has won 10 times in Rome. Throughout 18 Italian Opens, he had lost just once in the opening round, but three double faults and two service breaks gave Bergs of Belgium the opening he needed to grab the first set in hope of winning the 2-hour, 54-minute match. "It was not my best match. I was practicing better than how I played today, without a doubt, but I found a way to win," Nadal said. "This is so important at the beginning of the tournament. My game is more unpredictable than before. I didn't play much tennis for the past 2 years, so it is up and down. I think I can do much better than I did today and hope I can do it in the next round." Nadal, who's 37, has missed much of that time largely due to a hip injury. In what is expected to be his final ATP Tour season, the Spaniard undoubtedly wants a good showing in Rome, leading to the French Open, which he has won a record 14 times. Well, that's that article, but certainly Father Time or Mother Time or whatever, the body always tells you what's going to happen, right? So anyway, Nadal kind of winding down. It's hard to imagine he can play too many more seasons, but a heck of a tennis player. And so that is it for your Inquirer Sports on this Saturday. This is Jim Nunn wishing you a fantastic sports weekend. Thank you.